What we're dealing with here,
littering air,
is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoking the reefer.
Called the dust pump.
We live in a society of laws.
Dust pump?
Yeah. No, it's not real.
This thing of weed.
Takes one shot a weekend of training to get that bag.
Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome back to the Police Academy podcast. This is a must-listen show, and I don't say that lightly. I don't say that often. If you've been listening for a long time, you know if I say it, then you better listen to the whole damn show. It's a great interview with Brett Titus. Brett is a 20-year SWAT canine officer. He's retired now, but he spent 20 full years working on a full-time SWAT team as a canine handler, and he's also the creator of LifeSpot, which is an amazing app that that helps schools and workplaces respond to active shooter situations, and the law enforcement agencies in the area also respond and know what's going on in those locations. It's a life-saving app, and I think it's revolutionary. I think he's at the forefront of something that we have to move into with the technology that we have. And it's an amazing thing that he's created. And we talk about that toward the end of the show. So definitely stay tuned for that. I know a lot of listeners want to hear about the canine stuff, the SWAT stuff, and that is a great conversation as well. But LifeSpot is, at least I'm super excited about this app. I have kids, so it hits home for me because our schools are one of the least protected places in our country. They're extremely vulnerable. And one of the worst feelings as a parent is that feeling of helplessness when it comes to your kid's safety. And this is a huge step in the right direction. So stay tuned for that part of the conversation. Now, I mentioned Brett's background prior to being in law enforcement. In 1989, he enlisted in the United States Air Force. He then started on with the Denver Police Department in 1993. Then from 99, at which point he was already a canine officer, he joined the full-time SWAT team and stayed there until 2019 when he retired. He has deployed and participated in over 2,800 high-risk tactical operations, with several hundred of those ending in critical life and death incidents. Now, as a creator of an internationally recognized SWAT canine training program, Brett has also trained and provided lectures to over 8,000 police, SWAT, and canine officers around the country. Tons of experience, tons of wisdom here. He's also shared his life experiences with several thousand citizens to better educate them on becoming safer and more prepared in a crisis event. Now, we do talk about training civilians as well in the show. If you heard the arming teachers episode with Sheriff Mike Smith from Utah County, Utah, then we kind of touch on that as well, training teachers and civilians how to respond to active shooter events. So that's in here as well. We touch on that. But needless to say, Brett's experience and the depth of knowledge and wisdom that he can bring because of that is amazing. And it comes out in this episode. So definitely listen to the whole thing. And if you're a parent, please, like, go to the website, go to lifespotapp.com, just like it sounds, lifespotapp.com. You can see all the stuff that they're doing. It's a very good website, so you'll be able to understand what it is very simply, and check it out. Email your school system, email your sheriff, your police chief, whoever it is in your area that's responsible for this, for, you know, is jurisdictional authority over the schools. Let them know about this stuff, about this app, because this literally will save lives. The more schools we can get this into, the more hospital systems, the more, even private employers that employ many employees in one area, right? They're vulnerable. That we can get that app into, the better. I have no doubt that this app will save people's lives. So I'm just super excited. If you can't tell, I'm rambling on about this app because I'm extremely excited about what it is and the promise that it has. And I just really hope that I hope that everyone else listening sees in it what I see in it. And I think it might be harder if you're not a parent, but even so, like, Nora listeners are about protecting the vulnerable, protecting those who can't protect themselves. And this is a huge step in the right direction in being able to do that, in empowering those who do serve to do that or have signed up to do that, i.e. our police officers. It empowers them to do that better and faster with more information at their fingertips. So I've said enough. I'll let Brett explain the rest. It's a great interview. Brett, thanks again for coming on. And to all our listeners, we'll see you on the flip side. Enjoy the show.
It's been 4 years. This is way back, and I hate to even say how far it was, but I went in the Air Force in 89.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 88. Got out in 91 and then got on Denver in 93 and spent 26, almost 27 years there. And I'm in that rare opportunity as well to say I don't regret it. I had a great career. I've been a little bit of an entrepreneur outside of that. So even when I was on the job, I've built houses and car washes and owned six different businesses. So the me being a cop was just out of the sheer adrenaline, having fun, the camaraderie.
Yeah.
Loved it. Loved almost every minute of it. And, now I'm out and I run a tech company and I can barely operate my fucking phone. So it's just kind of odd for me, but it's been a good ride.
Yeah. I mean, kindred spirits in a lot of ways then, because I get it. I get the side hustle, it's like, and I could have very well followed that path had I seen that as a better avenue. I definitely would not have just sat in a cruiser and, punched out and gone home and sat on my couch. That's just it's not the way I work. Obviously, this show is a side hustle. It has been for 6 years. So, I love having guys like you on because, Tony Malik, I don't know if you know who he is, but he's with Secret Service doing the same thing. He's got a very successful clothing brand related to law enforcement called The Badge Life. But he's also just started an app, a tech startup, if you will, called, what's it called? Officer Survey. It's really cool to listen to guys, kind of talk to guys like you who've got your full-time job, which is nothing to joke about, obviously very demanding work, and then you've got a successful business going on the side, and it's just I just don't know how you guys do it, and I'm sure people look at me and say the same thing, but it's just a lot of work.
I was gonna say yeah, for sure. And that's the key key to success is you just can't be afraid to work, and you can't be afraid to expand out. I hear cops say it all the time. If I didn't have this job, I don't know anything else. And it's absolutely bullshit. Some of the most brilliant minds and the hardest workers are the guys that can put up with it on the street. If you can do that, if you can survive on the street and make good decisions, and you're not lazy, there's absolutely nothing in this world that you cannot accomplish. And I truly believe cops are probably at the higher end of that, and they just don't give themselves enough credit.
Yeah, 100% agree. Mark Cameron was on a couple weeks ago. He's the ghostwriter for the Tom Clancy books now. Mm-hmm. And he made a comment about someone along the way told him those 15 minutes between things that you've got to do, right? Those 15 minutes of downtime that you have here and there throughout life. Those 15 minutes are what make the difference between, the guy sitting there saying, how do you do all this, right? This job takes too much. And the guy who's doing it and successful, that grit, that drive is really the difference. I mean, if you don't have that, what can you really complain about? If you haven't put in the work, you can't say, well, it's too much. Well, you haven't even tried.
Yeah. Well said. No, well said, brother. No, it's good. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Definitely, that's where you're at. And you can see that's pretty good, man. You got a lot of powerful, if you will, guests, and that's good for you. And I so appreciate what you're doing. It's good that guys like you are out there to spread the word, and to, you know, especially in our career field, to there's just not a lot of options out there for guys, not, you know, especially nowadays. It's, I don't know how these new guys get on anymore and stay with it. I mean, good God, I got out just in time. Otherwise I probably would have been fired by now with all the bullshit that you've got to put up with.
Right. Right. Yeah. I don't know either. The majority of my listeners are either relatively new officers or they're looking to get in the career field. And so I can't be too pessimistic about getting into the career. Right. Although if, you know, one of my kids were like, "Dad, I want to go be a cop." I would give them every possible reason not to make that decision. I would even maybe go as far as telling them to join the military instead, which that is saying something, trust me. Let's talk about, your career in with Denver PD. You were Denver the whole time, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. So yeah, if you, a lot of our listeners are interested in SWAT, especially, and K-9. So, if you would just kind of like walk us through that process of your career and, maybe share some stories from your time on.
Sure. Yeah. So, I had a really unique, position. So Denver, we are a home rule city. And what that means is, so there's the Denver Police Department. We have a sheriff's office, but they don't patrol. So everything, the city and county of Denver are under one umbrella, and that's the police department. So, you know, a lot of other cities have sheriff's offices that surround the city, and the sheriff is kind of in charge. Mm-hmm. So in Denver, with being home rule city, we had a full-time SWAT team. Mm-hmm. And when I say full-time, that's all we did. We averaged around 400 operations a year. So we were doing something almost every day, a couple times a day, if you will. And my unique spot, so the canine unit works with the SWAT team. So I was a full-time SWAT dog, if you will. I know that term is used loosely out there, but so that's all I did. I didn't write tickets, didn't handle calls. Just assigned to the SWAT team, didn't do dope, didn't do bombs. I did nothing but hunt for, support the SWAT team, and bite people. So I had a single purpose bite dog, and it was an amazing career. I've logged around 2,800 tactical operations, with several hundred of those being critical incidents. In my career, three different dogs that I worked on the SWAT team, and had around, I think my final number was about 216 actual apprehensions, bites with the dog. So
nice.
a lot of good times, a lot of bad people, put in jail, and by the grace of God, a lot of operations, I got lucky. And as you know, I'd rather be lucky than good any day. So that's it kind of in a nutshell. Like I said, a very unique position, but very rewarding, and to work with the team that I did, some of the best men in the world, the biggest hearts, the bravest guys, and I loved every minute of it.
It sounds like you're pretty fortunate, because you went to SWAT, what, 6 years in?
Exactly.
And that's, you know, I think most departments like to see that like about 5 years before you go do something special. But to go SWAT and then also canine that early on is pretty rare, in my experience, at least. Do you feel like that was just a fortunate timing thing, or are you pretty, did you become buddies with the SWAT guys, or how did that work?
You know, I was, one of those, I'm sure you heard the expression, shit magnet. So I don't know if I should say that on your show.
Yeah, but, no, you can. You're fine.
Right. I figured we're talking to cops, so we're good. So I worked up in District 2 when I got out of the academy. Worked one of the roughest precincts up and down East Colfax. And just fortunately, to some degree, got into a lot of stuff. I had all kinds of critical incidents as a patrolman, had a good reputation, hard hitter. And that's what they look for to be a team guy. So I was real fortunate to have that experience as well. Was mentored by some great great leaders. And so just working hard on the street, I was able to make it over to the SWAT team. And yeah, I'm very fortunate to make it as young as I did. I was 28 years old. And I spent my whole career there, 21, almost 22 years on the team.
Wow. And that's, I mean, really, that's a dream for a lot of people that are looking to get into law enforcement, because especially a lot of dudes that are, and women who are in the military. And I guess I say dudes because I work with exclusively men, in the infantry. Granted, females are now allowed in the infantry, but there aren't any in my unit, but in any case, a lot of them want to go to law enforcement, but they're used to going and blowing stuff up and shooting people, right? Like, so right. They don't really feel like being, the statesman, right? The real, like, go and hold hands, kiss babies kind of law enforcement is really going to suit them so well. So they're really looking at the SWAT stuff and going, okay, I would love to do that, but how do I get there? And, you know, I'm always like, well, you will never be able to get into law enforcement and go straight to SWAT. Like, that's just really not a thing. Yeah. Okay. Maybe if you were like an SF or in a soft unit or something, like, you might get there really quick, but they're still going to expect you to become a cop and then, you know, go to SWAT in most cases. So, that's a dream for a lot of these guys. So it's awesome that you got to do that. I was going to ask, when you're talking about being a canine handler, you had three dogs. So which one was your favorite, if you could pick one? And I asked this because, one, out of just general interest, but because I know that these dogs, they all have their own personalities, their own character. They all hit differently. And I think that'll kind of illuminate a little bit one of the aspects of that job. So yeah. What dog was your favorite and why?
You know, that's a good question, but it's a hard question. It's kind of like asking, which one of your kids are the favorite.
I know it's hard.
So I will tell you this. So my first dog, was Oscar, kid, brand new, over onto the team. The training methods back then, so this was in 99, the training methods back then were not as evolved as they are today. So Oscar and I were somewhat of a shit show. It was, he was a mess. I was young. We're both young and dumb. Although the dog had the heart of a lion, my best friend loved him to death. But we were a train wreck. Then I had some, some scary moments with him, because we probably weren't trained as well as we should have been, and made some mistakes being young and dumb once again. So then my second dog, Stinger, he comes along, and I really started to put some thought into it, and I started to break it down and where am I having problems and why are these problems happening. And Stinger really set the precedence for using a dog with a SWAT team. Now at that time, I'm embedded with the team. Oscar was on the street with me for about 5, maybe 6 years, and then he had some health issues, so he somewhat retired early. But during that time is when I befriended and became a team member with the SWAT guys, and then comes Stinger, and I trained him differently. I did all kinds of different training methods, real positive reinforcement, tons and tons of obedience that led to control. Then I go to the SWAT team and I said, hey, don't go up in that attic, or don't go down in that basement, or don't go in that house until I send the dog in, because I have the control to do it. So Stinger actually set the new standard, if you will, for SWAT dogs. Then come my third dog, who is sitting here in the house right now. He's 13, Vis. By the time I got him, he was on the street with me for, 11 years, 10 years. And by the time I got him, now I'm an experienced guy. I'm older. I'm going to respectfully submit a little bit wiser. He was trained better and embedded with the SWAT team. And with him, my last 5 years, I was a senior guy, a senior dog. So to say I have one that is favorite over the other, I can say this is probably the best dog when it came to performance, but it had nothing to do with the other dogs. It actually had to do with me and my evolution. All three of them were equal in drive, equal in character traits or personality. All three of them were sweethearts. Yet this here at the end, he set records that were just unbelievable with the amount of operations. And using him, the SWAT team, our command, our leadership was amazing. They used us on every operation. So we had a saying that is still used today, actually across the country. We've trained thousands, lectured to and trained thousands of canine handlers and SWAT teams how to work together. And we coined a phrase, pause before boots. Sucks to say, but that's the reality of a canine handler is I can replace the dog. Yeah. Hate to say it, love my dog, but I cannot replace a person. So once I brought that to the SWAT team and said, there is absolutely no reason you should be going into that basement, into that attic, into that room without that dog going in first. So they all totally dug that. And once I had that attitude, I trained with them, went through their schools, learned how to be a SWAT guy, if you will. And that's where my career ended up with just being a part of that team and using that dog in just hundreds and hundreds of operations, or thousands, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that definitely has become the general kind of consensus in law enforcement and in the military. You know, if you have a dog, use the dog, right? But being the handler, I mean, like you said, it's kind of like asking which one's your favorite kid, but they're also kind of like your kids. So, you know, what was going through your mind? What did it feel like sending your dogs into situations where you knew they could, you know, be injured or killed?
You know, yeah, that's, I'll share a story with you. We had a barricade. Can't remember what the guy's issue was. Nonetheless, he had rifle rounds coming through the door, and we're on this place for hours. We're just up. It's a third story condo, kind of high end area, downtown Denver. And they didn't want to use gas. And that's usually protocol, but they didn't want to use gas because this was a higher end condo. Hadn't heard from the guy in several hours. We ended up doing an explosive breach on the door, but the door didn't blow all the way open. So we had very little intel. And, you know, again, as much as I do believe and I lived by pause before boots, command says, hey, we're going to go ahead. We have to make entry. Haven't heard from the guy for hours. And I totally understand that. But the issue was, they wanted to just send the dog in. Now we know he's got a rifle because he's been shooting out the door all day. So I had to use the dog, and I actually had got on the radio. And once again, this was later in my career. This is with my third dog, and I'm pretty respected. I actually knew my commander. We'd worked together for years. And I actually got on the radio and I said, excuse me, what the hell are we doing? Why aren't we gassing this? Couldn't get the robot in because there's just stuff everywhere. The guy trashed his house. The breach on the door didn't take it all the way off. So we couldn't get the robot in. And that was the last resort. And I'll never forget getting on the radio and I hear a pause and I can hear it in my commander's voice that he's probably talking to the chief or whoever was up there. And he says, no, we're not going to gas. We're going to use the dog. So I ask, you know, this is kind of a suicide mission here. What in the hell are we doing? And then he gets back on and basically says, hey, are you refusing to do it? Well, it was that moment that I had to think, well, if I refuse to do it, they're going to either send the guys in or they're going to call another dog team, some younger kid. And I'm just not going to let that rest on my conscience. So I ended up deploying. And it was one of the hardest things I'd ever done because, yeah, you're right. You know, you talk about A lot of handlers will say, "Oh, my dog's like my kid." Well, yes, I understand the point to it, but there's no way of command. So will you send your kid in there to go look around? Of course not. Right. So I send the dog in, searches around. It's just a one bedroom condo, so not a lot to search. We search the living room, get the main area. Nothing's left but the bedroom. Bedroom door's locked. The guy's breached that. Send the dog in. And as I send him in, I'm scared to death. I'm waiting to hear a shot. And I don't. We don't hear anything. So dog's in there. We hear him kind of rustling around. We make entry into the room. And unfortunately, the suspect had shot himself. So he was dead. And the dog was engaging him. And the moment I saw that, and again, this is way later in my career, thousands of operations, been there a million times. I actually saw that, and I have no problem saying it today. I actually started to cry. And just the relief of seeing my partner, oh, my God, he's alive. And here he is. I don't want to be too – well, hell, I can be graphic. You know, a guy blew his head off, and there's my dog gnawing on his leg. And I'm thinking, that's like the coolest thing I ever saw because my partner's still alive.
Yeah.
What's really unique is I get him off the bike, leash him up, and I'm walking out. And the guys see me teared up and crying. And those sons of guns had tears in their eyes as well. We were all so relieved that the dog lived, but at the same time, we all knew that that's just the sacrifice that we had to make.
Right. Yeah. That covers so many aspects of it. I mean, number one, pause before boots doesn't mean you're just going to send your dog, you know, at any given opportunity. Like you want to utilize the tools and equipment. A robot's better than the dog, because if they blow up a robot, it's just a robot. Right.
Right.
So that's a great point, but also the tears aspect of it. We just did a show on this because a listener wrote in and was like, "Listen, I'm a more emotional person. You know, I know how to handle myself, but I just feel for people. And so I'm afraid I'm going to be crying on the job all the time." And, you know, so we did a show on it, and it's like, so I shared some stories from my career, where there were days, you know, there are tears in my eyes, and the same thing, you turn around and same with your leadership or your partner or whatever. And it's like, okay, you know, it's okay. You got a bunch of SWAT guys and the canine handler that are all kind of tearing up because, you know, we're not robots. We're human beings. Yeah. We put on a tough guy, you know, outer shell a lot of times, but, we still love each other, and we love, you know, a canine as a partner. And I think you made a great point there. You know, it's like, yeah, they're not your kids. They're your partner, though. And yeah. And I don't think any cop would, unless they have a really bad relationship with their coworker, you know, wants to see their partner get hurt. So great points all around. So let's transition a little bit, because, you know, now you're retired. You're taking all the experiences that you had, and everything that you learned being a canine handler and a SWAT operator into private business. Let's talk about the current situation with gun violence in the United States first, and then we'll kind of lead into what you're doing now in the private sector. So kind of just give us a Reader's Digest of where we're at in 2021, or, you know, at least in the last couple of years with gun violence.
You know, I, the pandemic, of course, I won't get on my soapbox about that, but, I think a lot of, what we're going to see here in the future is going to be, more violent. I think our country is in my 51 years on the planet, I think our country is in the worst shape that I've ever seen it or heard. And they always talk about, you've heard the pendulum, right? The pendulum always swings. Well, I've been told that for the 30 years that I've been in law enforcement, from the military to Denver, and it's not coming back the other way. And the gun violence is part of just that pendulum still going the wrong way. Mm-hmm. People are more violent. The world is more violent. And I don't see, I surely don't have the answer to how to fix that. But what I will tell you is the guys that are out there on the street now, just crazy respect for you guys that are out there still doing it. And you always have to ask yourself, if not you, then who, and then where's our country? So it's, with the violence that we're seeing and the crap that the cops are putting up with now, that's my biggest fear is, you know, do we have enough of those good guys out there to weather this storm? And, you know, like a storm, is this storm going to end? Because it seems like the storm is actually getting worse. I mean, we're not even through the tail end of it yet. Mm-hmm. And that's my biggest fear. And what I see with gun violence is it just seems to be getting worse. I know several departments, you see it all the time. We've got billboards here in Denver with other agencies trying to hire cops out of here. I got good friends in Seattle and places like that they're just leaving. Dozens and dozens of them are just leaving. Mm-hmm. But where does that leave those communities? Where does that leave the good people that live in those communities? Right. So that's what my opinion of gun violence is. It's just a reflection of our society and the way the world is today. Everything is just so violent. And now we're throwing that at the cops, like it's somehow their fault, or it's somehow that without them, things are going to get better. This defund the police, these people are just, that's moronic. It's absolutely ridiculous, because once things go bad, those same people, what do they do when somebody's breaking in their house? What do they do when it's their property that's getting damaged? They call the police. So mm-hmm. I don't know how to fix it, but I will tell you this, it needs, and you guys that are out there looking back at it, you got to remember it's worth it. Because again, if not you, then who? And that thin blue line between the good and the evil, you've got to hold that line. And I respect all of you guys that are out there still doing it today, because it is much harder job that you have now than I had, say 10 years ago.
Yeah. And that's not to say that those officers that are leaving are not, you know, upholding their oath, for example, that they're doing anything wrong. And I've talked about this a little bit in the past. If you remember the Rashard Brooks incident in Atlanta, yeah. At the Wendy's drive-thru, after that, you know, I think it was that night or the night right after it happened. You know, they had whole entire precincts of the city not responding to calls. And I know especially a lot of cops' reaction to that would be, well, that's wrong, because there's still good people there that need to be protected. And that's 100% accurate. And the same goes for, you know, Portland, Seattle, where the cops are leaving in droves and they can't replace them that fast. You know how long it takes to train a new cop, you know, you know, it's at least a year from hiring them to training them, get them on the road. It's more than a year. So, I have a little bit more nuanced kind of perspective on when cops are choosing to leave, and the reaction to, like you said, this pendulum has swung so far that, because the thin blue line is not just the cops, right? Because cops have to have support. We can't do it without our communities behind us and without our prosecutors behind us, right? Like if you're out there just essentially digging your own grave, going after bad guys and getting thrown under the bus by your community and, you know, the rest of the legal system, what is there? That thin blue line's already broken, right? And it's not your fault as an officer. So I definitely don't, you know, personally, I kind of agree in a lot of ways with these officers who are leaving. And I don't think that it's a moral failure on their part. And not suggesting that's what you're saying. I just want to kind of like hash out both sides of that, because it's, I think if the pendulum is going to swing back, like you said, there's good people in Seattle, Portland, in Atlanta, Chicago, There's good people there, and no one wants them to get hurt because cops are leaving. At the same time, if there are enough good people to be able to maintain that thin blue line, those people have to speak up. And the problem is those, you know, we talk about the silent majority. Well, number one, is it a majority anymore? I don't know.
Yeah.
But we will never know if they don't speak up. And it seems that in the comfort of their, you know, regular job and fear of being chastised and ostracized on social media, the backlash from the woke left, that they stay silent, right? Because their life is still going just fine. When their city's on fire, it's not going so fine. And so I see that as one way in which the pendulum will potentially at least slow down when you have these officers leaving in droves, cities falling apart. Portland and Seattle are great examples because the cops there are doing nothing. The ones that are still there and the people that live there are suffering for it. And I do know a lot of the civilians there are leaving. So to the pendulum conversation, I think people I've talked to who are in their 70s at this point, they feel like they have seen some, you know, times this bad in the United States. But I think people need to realize that even if the general tendency is the pendulum swinging back and forth, that does not mean it's going to do it in the future, right? Because history always repeats itself. And so, yeah, you can say, well, historically it swings back and forth. But if you go further back in history, every civilization at some point, the pendulum kept swinging and the metronome tipped over and the country ceased to exist, right? So nothing says that it has to swing back the other way. And I'm with you. I'm really not sure if it's going to swing back because I don't see it slowing down.
For sure. Yeah.
I see that our country's asleep right now and it's pretty scary.
Yeah. And just to, and you're right to clarify, if I gave that impression that the guys that are leaving, absolutely. I would too. Matter of fact, I did, you know, with 27 years on, and I won't get deep into how Denver's retirement works, but I left the job early. I technically had 5 more years before I was eligible to retire. So the guys that are leaving, I absolutely agree and respect that decision. But the guys that are staying, I just want them to know that it is worth it. So everybody's got an individual decision, but my hat's off to the guys that are fighting through it. And my hat's off to the guys that have the courage to leave, because it is not easy to leave, especially you've been there a while, you've got passion for the career. Sometimes it's just not worth the risk of one, losing your life, and then two, losing everything in today's day and age over a split second decision that you have to make.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of gun violence, let's talk a little bit about mass shootings specifically, because that's, you know, where LifeSpot comes in. I had the Utah County Sheriff on a couple weeks ago, and in Utah, civilians can carry anywhere. They don't have gun-free zones. So a parent can go to a kid's soccer game, basketball game, whatever, and carry open or concealed in a school. Teachers can do the same. That sheriff's office, that particular sheriff himself decided, well, okay, given our laws or lack of restrictions on carrying, we know we have teachers carrying. So why not at least give them some tools, give them some training so that if we do have someone come into our schools, the teachers who are carrying can respond to that. And I love that because politically speaking, and I think politics are really the only thing in the way of what in my opinion is the only answer that we currently have to especially school shooters, right? The only real, I won't say always effective answer, but I think the most effective. I want to see what you think on that. and this is not a mutually exclusive thing, right? You can have armed teachers also, you can have LifeSpot, and those things working together are better than either one alone. Would you agree with your experience in these critical incidents? Obviously you've been to lots of situations that parallel this, that having armed and responsible and trained citizens is one of the, if not the most effective response to mass shooters.
Yeah, absolutely. Lot of different things. There is no one answer, but if I were to really break it down, the number one best practice would be to have good guys with guns. We are big supporters. We have an organization here in Colorado called FASTER. It's an organization, nonprofit, that they train teachers and staff to be armed, and they are trained by some of the most experienced guys around. And what was funny to me is you get this pushback on that, it's just more guns in schools, and until the bullets start flying. And what I thought was interesting, these armed staff members, they go through such rigorous training. I don't quote me on exactly how many times a year they have to shoot and qualify, but it's multiple times. Mm-hmm. And when I left Denver, our department, because of costs and ammo and God knows why, we only had to shoot, and on the SWAT team is different, but patrol only had to shoot one time a year.
Right.
And that's just insane to me. But, a lot of guys, most guys take it upon themselves and go out and shoot and make sure they're proficient, make sure they're good at what they do. But these armed staff members, there's such a rigorous training regimen and certification that in some aspects, they're very well trained. A lot of our clients that have LifeSpot right now are school districts that have armed staff. I know these guys, I've seen their training, and you're absolutely right. The number one defense against an active shooter is another person on that campus with a gun. The threat is measured in seconds, and police response time is measured in minutes.
Right.
We need to have those folks right there. And even, SROs, there's been how many now incidents where SROs were actually on campus, but that's one SRO, one cop. And some of those campuses are huge. They can't be everywhere. So I agree wholeheartedly, the best solution to stop an armed attacker is to have your own armed staff to defend our kids. Mm. And that's really what it's all about, defending our kids. That is our number one resource. That is our future is our children. And if we're not doing everything we can to protect them, then shame on us.
So this nonprofit, FASTER, is this in what geographical area does that cover? Where, the people that are coming through the program, where are they at?
The organization, I believe, started in Ohio, okay. And then they have chapters, across the states. And the chapter here in Colorado is run by a lady, Laura Carno, and her cohort, Bill Trees. And those are two of the, they're not cops. They just care about school safety and care about our kids. And they've done just an absolutely amazing job of arming our teachers here. And I know talking to the parents are like, oh yeah, it's such a comfort knowing that there's somebody there well-trained that is going to protect my kids.
So it is legal for a teacher to be armed in a Colorado school?
Lot of different, yes and no. It's all up to the school district. They can make that decision. But as of now, no, it is not legal for civilians to carry inside schools, K-12 schools in Colorado, unless the school district approves it. And then there's certain training and things that they have to go through.
Okay. Yeah. That's just kind of surprising to me because, Colorado, thanks to Denver and Boulder and whatnot, is a blue state. So, they've been very restrictive on firearms and magazine capacity. So I'm surprised to hear that that's even a possibility there.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's good to hear.
Some of it's more of our outlying counties that allow that. The county sheriffs that do the certifications and CCWs and sign off on that. And then the school district makes sure that they get the proper training, i.e. through FASTER. So it's starting to be a more of a trend. Again, we support them, not just supporting them with word of mouth and references, but also financially. I mean, it's not cheap to train these people and maintain that. So we try to do what we can, because again, this is about the kids. This is about making sure our prized possessions are taken care of.
Right. And I want to, I guess, make sure that something you said is not lost on everyone listening. And I was thinking about this before you came on, because I thought it would probably come up. And that is, you mentioned the lack of training for a standard police officer in Denver PD, right? When you left, one time a year, they're on the range. Doesn't mean that a lot of those guys and gals aren't out training on their own, but a lot of them aren't. We all know this. And you've worked with them. I've worked with them. There are cops out there that can't hit the broadside of a barn. Let alone the fact that SROs, no offense, my best partner from my PD is still an SRO. And I doubt he's listening, but if he is, no offense, buddy, but SROs a lot of times tend to be about the least tactical cops out there, right? So, which is unfortunate, but you made a great point. These cops, you got one cop in a big school, even if that's the most tactical cop on the department, is one guy. And yeah, that's better than nothing, but those odds aren't great. You know, in the Army, we go 3-to-1 odds, right? We try to assess the enemy's strength. And if we are, it's a 50-50 battle, it's an even match, we're not going to intentionally engage that enemy, even though we're better, right? We've got better equipment, better training, better soldiers. We're still not going to engage in that. So even if it's only one shooter, that's a head-to-head battle, not a great scenario. And you know, I think people, and I've heard this a lot from veteran officers, and they tend to be the more tactical ones who think that civilians shouldn't be carrying in these situations because they don't have the experience and training that cops do. And my response to that is, well, there are a lot of cops that you work with that are no better. And the civilians who are interested in this do take this seriously. They're training on their own. They're paying for these classes and oftentimes are better prepared, at least in a strictly tactical sense, than a regular cop is. So I think I wanted to highlight that you made that point. I just want to make sure that's not lost on people. Like, you're a veteran SWAT officer, basically saying like having a cop in school is not the answer, right? Like, and I think that's a huge point.
It's one step towards the solution, but that's one out of 10 steps. And yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a start, but it's just not nearly enough. There's been, you know, Columbine, there was an SRO on scene there. There was two gunmen. Florida, Stoneman, gosh, what's the name of the school?
Parkland.
Park. Yeah. that officer there, I won't get deep into that, but yeah, it is a step. I think it's a good step, but to your point, you know, there's good and bad. I know everybody says this, there's good and bad to everything. Yep, there are some cops I've seen over the years that I have to ask myself, how in the hell did you even make it through the academy, and who in the heck lets you carry a gun? So I get it, as in the civilian world, but from my experience, to the tune of hundreds of armed staff and teachers that I've personally met, you're right, they have passion for this. They love to shoot. They shoot a hell of a lot more than most of the cops are even required to do. So yeah, your point is well taken, that there's good and bad and everything, but I have yet to see or yet to train with any of these staff or teachers that one were forced into it, that just truly didn't, they were just dying to do it. They want to do it. Mm-hmm. And they're pretty damn well trained.
Right. And the standard can be so much higher, you know, because you in law enforcement, you've got unions for one, right? So the standard is so low, whether it's physical fitness, whether it's firearms training, whatever it is, such that even the lowest or the weakest link in that chain can still succeed, because these guys, you know, they want job security. But if you've got a private training program, you have no obligation to pass anybody, right? Yeah. If there's a certification you get at the end, it's like, listen, this is our standard. Yeah. And we'll train you till you meet the standard, but our standard is high. And so that's a huge benefit that a private program has over, you know, law enforcement training. Sure. So you've come up with because, you know, we mentioned politics before, right? So there are lots of places, I would assume Denver proper, especially places like Boulder. There's no way in hell a teacher's carrying a gun there, right? Yes. The parents there would lose their minds if they knew there was a gun within a mile of their school, which of course there are, and they don't know it. But so you've come up with a solution that kind of works around that, because I think that in places where the politics get in the way, at least this is going to help in the response to an active shooter. So explain to our listeners what LifeSpot is, kind of where you came up with this idea and how it works.
So one of the biggest problems I've seen through all of the operations I've been on, the biggest problem that we're going to have in any of these critical incidents, any of these school shootings, these mass shootings, is response time. Again, we just talked about the threats measured in seconds, response measured in minutes. We got to fix that. I just had an amazing dinner with John and Maria Castillo a couple weeks ago. Their son was Kendrick, who was the brave young man that lost his life by attacking the shooter at the STEM school here in Colorado. And one of the things that we talked about when we were talking about LifeSpot was that response time. And I remember reading the report, and it was almost, they used the term law enforcement had a very fast response. Officers were notified in 2 minutes. Right. Now you think about that, 2 minutes, that's a lifetime in a literal sense. You know, we're losing lives in seconds, mm-hmm. and 2 minutes takes forever. So that was one of the biggest problems and challenges I saw, was how can we get the good guys there faster? The other part of that is notification. Who needs to know there's a threat? Who needs to know there's a shooting going on? Mm-hmm. Well, of course, law enforcement, whether that's the cop, their command, 911, but everyone on campus needs to know as well, as fast as we can. So those two challenges are probably the most significant. And then there's location. You know, where's it at? Where's it at on campus? Can the victim even spout out the address or just the name of the school? Or am I in the northwest corner? Well, actually, no, you're on the southeast
right. corner.
So location is another challenge. Communication. Communication in these mass events, you know, pick any high school, pick any of the bigger schools, or not even high school, you're going to have 100, 150 staff members. And then how many thousands of kids that are going to have a cell phone? The moment that shot goes off, the moment that threat is perceived, everyone dials 911. And on a good day, pick a big major metropolitan city. Let's talk Denver. And you're going to have, what, a dozen call takers on, six dispatchers or so. Well, who's going to take 1,000 calls? 12 people can't do it. So there's pertinent, valuable information that does not get through in these mass incidents. Mm-hmm. So that's where LifeSpot comes in. We solve 5 major challenges. One, our response time, the moment LifeSpot is activated. And to activate it, it takes about 3 seconds, 3 to 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. And in that 3 to 5 seconds, everyone on campus gets notified. Law enforcement goes directly to the cop. It also goes directly to 911. So opposed to a 2-minute fast response time, we're doing it in 5 seconds or less. Mm-hmm. So right there is the game changer. It also provides GPS. The moment that button is swiped, then that person is GPS. That goes to law enforcement as well. So we know exactly where to head. Everyone on campus is also, when they open their app and set their status, their GPS. So when we show up on scene, we know, we see dots on a screen that gives everyone's location. Then the communication piece, they can then text direct to law enforcement. We talked about armed staff. Law enforcement now with LifeSpot, instead of a dot, if you're an armed staff member, you come up as a triangle. So now law enforcement, when they get on scene, the command is watching this screen, dispatch is watching the screen, telling officers, hey, you have two triangles on the northwest corner of the building. Be aware, those are good guys with guns, and now we have communication with them. So to solve that many problems on a simple to use technology, it came to me on just dealing with several of these operations, and you get there and you're like, well, I don't even know who's inside, and I don't even know how to communicate with them. So that's where LifeSpot came from, is just being frustrated with the way things are done now. And with technology and the way it works today, we were able to build it. We have thousands of users today, 18 law enforcement agencies here in Colorado. We're expanding out to other states as we speak. And it's the game changer. We have now enhanced 911 response time, communication. All of those challenges that I just mentioned are now solved by a simple to use app on your phone.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, officers don't, number one, have 2 minutes. It takes 2 minutes to even notify them, right? Yeah. If you've been on the other end of that radio for very much time at all, you know how long it takes dispatch to get, not knocking on dispatchers, sure, but they have a really hard job. And for them to take all this information, filter it down to something that they can give you that's useful, takes time. And when, even once you get to that school as an officer, you don't have time to sit there and wait for dispatch to tell you what's going on in that school. You're going in blind. Obviously you're also not going to go into that school with a phone in your hand, but you can have your, whoever is in charge, right, sitting outside or just stationary wherever they're at. They're not even probably at the school, giving the officers on scene that information. Like, hey, you got a couple of, you got triangles here, here, and here. And I was going to ask, what kind of notification or statuses rather do the staff have the ability to select from, right? Like, how does that work? Cause can they say like, I'm safe, I'm injured, or what kind of notifications do you have?
Yeah. So the, they're going to make a choice. We have a curriculum that we teach as well. We call it the 5 F's, far more comprehensive than, run, hide, fight. Some of the other, programs that are out there with acronyms that half the people don't even know what they mean. They can't remember. So our 5 F's, are plain speak, focus, flee, fortify, fight, first aid. And the app, once the user, so it's geofence. So one, it can't be used at home. It's only when you're at school. So it only works when you're at your place of work. They're going to have two things. They're going to see a red shaded circle, a Google Earth view of their campus. A red shaded circle is the approximate location of where the threat started. Then they're going to see a yellow dot, which is their location. Mm-hmm. That's the information they get. Now they can make a better educated decision of, do I flee or do I fortify? Wow, there's that red. I am right next to that red shaded area. I better fortify my position, grab as many kids as I can, barricade my door. Mm-hmm. We don't believe in just lock the door, shut the lights off, and wait and pray for the best. We want you to be more proactive. You take that desk and you fortify your position. Flee. If you can get out and you see that red circle is way on the north end of the building, you're outside, perhaps in the parking lot on the south end, then you select flee and you get the heck out. So those are going to be the choices. Then we have a communication screen. Once the user makes that choice, I'm going to flee or fortify, that information goes to command. Then cops are going to know who left the area. We're GPSing them real time. We can communicate with them. Once they're safe, then we have what's called a communication screen, where you can send a chat or receive a chat from law enforcement, just basically your standard text message. And we also have an injured button. If you are with somebody or yourself, there's a serious injury, you press that button, that changes your dot that law enforcement sees to red. Now we know where we need to get our resources, opposed to that same person trying to dial 911, getting a busy signal. No operators are available because everybody else is calling. Law enforcement instantly sees where the injured parties are at, and we start to get resources. So it's super simple for the user to use. There's only three different buttons. That's it. And the rest of it is just valuable information that in today's day and age, with the systems that we have in place, we're the only system that is capable of doing what we do.
All right. Yeah. Extremely valuable information. I mean, you don't need an extreme depth of information, but you need some very simple details. And so, yeah, that simplicity is great for the user, the staff, but it provides the most important information for the officers coming in. So it sounds amazing. Sounds like something that we should have in all of our schools, quite frankly. So how do we get this into, and it's not just schools, right? It's you do it with private businesses and any workplace or large facility.
Yeah, we will be in one of our larger hospital chains here in Colorado. Mm-hmm. We're finishing up some of the legal portions of that. Mm-hmm. I was shocked, to be honest with you, how many shootings occur at hospitals. I was dumbfounded by the mm-hmm. number. Far more than school shootings. Not that any of them are good, right. But it's hospitals are really a dangerous place.
So how do we get it? What's the process look like? You know, how are you expanding this to different schools and different businesses? If someone's listening, they're like, hey, this sounds like a great idea. I want my kids to have this. Me being one of them, right? Like I love my kids' school to have this too. How does that process work?
You know, of course, our lifespotapp.com is our website. And right now it's really unique. This is, we haven't done much marketing because we haven't needed to. We are expanding and growing. We're hiring new folks. We just brought on a second developer. And so right now, just get a hold of us and we'll do a Zoom, we'll do a demo, we'll fly out to you, actually let you play with it, touch it, move it around. It's so, again, so simple and easy to use, and it's inexpensive. We're not looking to, I mean, again, this is about our kids. Yes, we're not a nonprofit. Yes, we have to make money. It's not cheap to build an app, but we are anywhere from, depending on the number of users, depending on the size of the school, we have some of our clients that are down to 40 cents a month per user. So anyone that's seen it, has actually touched it and played with it, has said, oh yeah, we want this, let's do it. So that's where we're at, trying to keep up with the demand, but we are, and we will continue. And you're absolutely right. My goal is to have this in every school. Again, we're the only app, we're the only technology that solves all of the challenges that you're going to face in an active shooter event. So that's, we take a lot of pride in that.
That is astonishing. I did not expect it to be, you know, like you said, it there's a spectrum of what it's going to cost per user, but that's way cheaper than I thought it would be. Because obviously it's not only the school or the business that needs to have this, right? It's the agency responsible for that jurisdiction too. So how is that played out as far as like, okay, yeah, we got the school on board. I don't know why a sheriff's office wouldn't, you know, adopt it if the school did, but what seems to work the best as far as like, you got to get the school on board first, the sheriff, or how's that work?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. So we've done both. And you're absolutely right. One, we donate it to law enforcement. They don't have to pay for a thing. We do the training, everything. It doesn't cost law enforcement a dime. So with that being said, of course, they know the benefits of it and they jump all over it. We've been back and forth. I have now decided we're going to go to law enforcement first, make sure that they're okay with it, and then we start to hit up their schools. We've done it the other way, and the schools want it so bad, they're ready to go that day, and law enforcement can take a little bit to get to the right people to take a look at it. So what we've decided is from now on, we go to law enforcement first, make sure they're supporting it, and then we bring it out to the schools, and then we're ready to go.
Interesting. Yeah, I see. I could see you the possibility of leveraging that both ways, right? You get the school going, hey, guess what? You know, if the school was gutsy enough, the leadership there was gutsy enough to go, hey, we're paying for this, Sheriff. Like, are you gonna work with us or not? Because if we have a shooter, we've got the capability to give you information you need, and it's free for you. So what do you have to lose, right? And then you have the other side of, you know, okay, well, law enforcement's gonna take a minute, so let's go there first, and then, you know, the sheriff reaching out to the, you know, the superintendent saying, hey, this is something that we think is going to be super useful. And then the schools jump on board. So, it just seems like a no brainer though, on both sides. So
you would think, yeah, again,
I'm sure you've had cases where they say no, but.
Well, you know how cops are. They, a lot of them are skeptical, right, until they see it. And that's why I say the hard part is getting to the people that can make that decision. Mm-hmm. You know, you show it, you talk about it, and everybody's like, oh, everybody's got an app. Well, no, not really. No one out there does what we do. And then, of course, and I'm the same way, skeptical cops, once we put it in their hand and they see the information, they see how fast it is, you mean, wait a minute, I'm going to be notified in 5 seconds and not 2 minutes? Yep. And then they see it, and then they're like, yep, buy-in, it's done. But it is, it's very difficult. Police departments, and I don't, of course, blame the leadership in police departments. They get hit up by every vendor. Everybody is trying to sell them something. So I totally understand that. But my only complaint is, you know, take a look at it. I'm not a computer guy. I'm not the tech guy. I'm a guy that's actually been there, done it. So I think that helps me get into the door a little bit faster. Mm-hmm. And the free part of it, who wouldn't want a free tool to help save lives? That just, absolutely mind boggles me. But once we get in the door and get to the right people, 99% of the time they jump right on it.
That's awesome. Just writing down a quote of you. So I'll let you give the website and in any ways that people can reach out. If they want to contact you.
Yep. It's lifespotapp.com. Tons of information. There's videos. We explain everything. I'm pretty proud of our web designer. He did a great job of putting as much info on there as possible without being overwhelming and obnoxious. Lifespotapp.com. My information's on there, my email, my phone number. Anyone that's interested, any cops out there, make your schools safer. I know it sounds like a sales pitch, and yes, I am selling it, but it comes from experience, comes from a good place of what really happens on these mass critical incidents. And this is the tool that will fix all of the challenges that you're gonna face responding to these deals.
Awesome. Well, Brett, thanks for spending time with us today. And more importantly, thanks for, really sticking your neck out in creating something like this, because I've looked at creating an app in the past multiple times for different things, and it's a daunting task. I mean, it's not something to take lightly. And it's not just an app, right? There's so much that we would put the audience to sleep talking about that goes in to, you know, what you've done to make this. So hats off to you, number one, for your time and service with Denver PD and SWAT. But also for making this available, because this is where we need to go. And you're the guy that saw it and put that saw that need and created a solution for it. And that's amazing. So I just can't say enough how much I'm thankful for that you've done this. And I personally am going to go to my kids' school district and try to get this in my kids' school because I'm not there. So
thank you. Yeah, no. And you know what? Thank you for the kind words. And, you know, I'm honored. I'm honored to do it. I'm honored to be blessed to be in the position to do it, had the career that I did. So yeah, thank you. But it was an honor for me to have the career and an honor for me to now take that knowledge and pass it on and make people even more safe.
All right, that's a wrap for this one, ladies and gents. Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, it's lifespotapp.com where you can find all the information about this this system, the thing that Brett has created. It's amazing. And I hope everyone's as excited about it as I am and really gets the word out to wherever you are. Get the word out. Just send an email to your school superintendent and I would say not and or, but and the sheriff, the police chief, whoever it is that's responsible for protecting those schools in your area. You can do that one little thing and you literally could help save kids' lives, or if it's, you know, a hospital system, just people. And, you know, we're all about saving people's lives if we can. So do that for us. Go check it out. And, you know, I think that it speaks for itself. Like I said in the show, it's a no-brainer. I don't know why anyone would turn down the opportunity to have this kind of a tool in their school or in their workplace. All right. On the show side of things, shows have been a little slow coming out lately. I apologize for that. We're probably going into another 2 months of more studying. If you've all been following that, especially our members know what's going on with that. I've been distracted, let's say, by a requirement to study for the LSAT, and I will have to continue studying for another 2 months, unfortunately. So shows will continue to be slower to come out, and we will be making some adjustments to our membership to make it, I think, more fair to our members. I don't like our members paying for something that I feel like I'm not providing. So we're going to make some adjustments there, and I'm not sure how it's going to look yet, and I'll update our members on that, but that is coming. That's what's going on behind the scenes. But I'm glad I got this interview in with Brett today because it was just, today is September 11th, is 20-year anniversary of September 11th, 2001. And it's an interesting analogy. What Brett has created is a way to not just sit around and wait for bad people to do terrible things to our citizens. And that's what happened in 9/11. Those attacks had been a long time in the making. And when they happened, we decided, hey, we're not going to sit around and wait anymore. And, you know, 20 years later, we're finally really ending officially the war on terror. But the quote unquote, I don't want to call it a war, but the fight to protect our citizens and especially our children in schools will never end. And this app is one very powerful way in which we can be proactive about doing so, about protecting them and not just sitting around and waiting for a bad thing to happen. So, and that's why I'm so excited about this app. Again, it's lifespotapp.com. So go check that out. If you're not a member of the show, you can find out more about that over at patreon.com, patreon.com. Our members have access to our Tumblr. They get discounts on our merch, which is still in the making. Haven't heard from my supplier, but we should be getting shirts here pretty soon. I expected them already, so I'm gonna have to check in with him. You get early release episodes. You get full length episodes. Sometimes we only do release part of a show to the public, so members get all of the episodes in full length and detail. And also every member gets access to our private chat server. So, and that's one of the best things of the membership. We're having conversations over there daily, talking about all kinds of different law enforcement stuff. The guys and gals over there are sharing their stories from the street as they happen. You know, it's in the middle of the night, someone will be posting because they're working nights. Hey, I just had this crazy call. Like, you guys wouldn't believe it, blah, 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 right? Like, it's just a fun thing, and it's members only. So go check that out, patreon.com. And I would love to see you over there. Supports the show, but also gets you connected with a great community of listeners and really just very devoted people to their communities and to the show. And they're obviously awesome people, because otherwise they wouldn't be there, right? So go check that out. And that's all I've got for this one. Thank you all for tuning in. I hope that me saying this is a must listen rings true to you now and you agree. If you don't, then sorry, I didn't intend to mislead, but I don't think anyone's going to be in that boat. It was a great show. So thanks again, Brett, for coming on. And thank you all for listening. We will see you all on the next one. In the meantime, stay safe. And as always, do good, be strong, stay free.